I'm Jason Michael Perry, the man with three first names, and this is Thoughts on Tech and Things. Technology and fashion have been trying to get together for a long time, and it's not going very well. In 2015, Google and Levi announced a jacket with touch-sensitive fabric woven into the sleeves. You could swipe your cuff to skip a song, and it flopped. Nobody, I guess, wanted to charge their jacket every day. Around the same time, Google Glass was announced. It was a $1,500 device that you wore on your face, and that spawned the term glasshole. And then, of course, there was the original Apple Watch, the Apple Watch Edition, which was the 18-karat gold version starting at $10,000. And I think Apple maybe sold 1,000 of them, but it was discontinued in a year, and it's now this super expensive paperweight. What you're seeing here is that it just hasn't worked. Fashion and tech, for some reason, haven't been on the same page. Now, the question is if AI is going to have a different impact on the fashion industry, if this is a different thing. Today, I'm joined by Janie Park, a global marketing executive who spent 20 years at brands like LVMH and Elizabeth Arden. And now she runs the Digital Runway, covering what happens when fashion and AI collide. But first, let's look at some headlines that frame this conversation. And of course, a note from our sponsor. The path to growth shouldn't stop at the border. The World Trade Center Institute provides the connections, knowledge, and global network Maryland's most ambitious leaders need to scale. From executive development to international trade, we help our region's businesses thrive on the world stage. Start your global journey at WTCI.org. Invested in AI but not seeing results? You're not alone. Perry Labs helps organizations figure out what's working and what's next. Start with our AI assessment at perrylabs.io. When you think about emerging technology and AI, it's probably not fashion that comes to mind. But AI is having a real impact on the fashion industry, not just on the business side, but in ways that you might not expect. A great example is the backlash that happened last summer when Vogue's print edition ran an ad from Guess using an AI-generated model. People called for boycotts in the magazine and Guess, readers canceled subscriptions, and it raised real questions about beauty standards, creative jobs, and what's happening when the model in the magazine doesn't actually exist. But here's the thing, that same Vogue ran a piece on how fashion designers are starting to use AI in their work. Vogue talked to designers backstage at Fashion Week and found essentially three camps. Those who are using AI as a creative partner, one designer fed a poem into an AI model and used the outputs to design a collection. Others are using it behind the scenes to speed up the concept phase. And then there are designers who are deliberately saying, no, AI and technology does not have a space in this creative world. Paris Fashion Week just hosted its first ever AI Expo, a dedicated event that was alongside the traditional runways and was focused entirely on the impact of AI on creativity. There were AI startups showing off virtual try-on tech, trend forecasting tools, and generative design platforms that specifically exist to help create clothing. So let's dig into this with somebody who's been living at this intersection for years, Janie Park. My guest today has spent more than 20 years inside fashion and beauty at brands like LVMH, Elizabeth Arden. You know, I don't know why I can ever read, but my guest today has spent more than 20 years inside fashion and beauty at brands like LVMH, Elizabeth Arden, and Nordstrom. She's now the founder of The Digital Runway, a media brand covering what happens when fashion meets AI. She's spoken at CES, the UN Science Summit, and recently with the BBC about wearable technology. Janie Park, welcome to Thoughts on Tech and Things. It's great to have you. How are you doing?
Good. How are you? Thank you so much for having me. I usually am on the other side of talking and asking questions, so I like being able to talk freely or yap, as the kids of the generation say.
Well, relax, take a break, and let me take on some moderating duties for you, Mr. Host, today.
So, Janie, I imagine that people who are listening today are thinking to themselves that it's crazy that we're connecting these two worlds of fashion and technology. These are two isolated worlds that people talk about, but they're not used to them coming together as a thing, right? It's like oil and vinegar. At least maybe this is me. I'm not the stylish person in the room here who's talking about this. But in that same way, I would imagine that people in fashion aren't necessarily thinking about AI, robotics, quantum, the kind of emerging technology stuff that we talk about. But you are like smack dab in the middle of these worlds where these two things collide. And so I'm just wondering, for someone who's never heard the idea or the terms fashion tech, like, how would you explain the space that you live in?
Yeah, I mean, you know, having been in the industry, worked on the traditional side, and now literally having fell deep down the rabbit hole of tech, which was actually by way of Web3, blockchain, crypto, NFTs, and then now really just connecting the dots between, you know, what's going on in beauty, fashion, retail, under the umbrella of innovation when it comes to emerging tech, AI, in different use cases. I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, it's literally just the connection of fashion and technology. So if you're looking at concentric circles together, you have fashion, you have technology, and within technology, obviously, there's different aspects of it. But what it really boils down to is how are fashion companies using tech and AI to solve problems or to design in a more efficient way. There's a lot of different ways and what it actually looks like. But really, at the end of the day, it comes down to the integration between the two. And I think it has already existed for many years. But the fact of the matter is that tech has always been silent and no one really cared to talk about it and really kind of combine the words together. Whereas now fashion tech or AI fashion is a buzzword that people really want to talk about.
So when I think of fashion tech, I think of a lot of failures. So hear me out here. But there's this graveyard that I think maybe this is because, you know, tech folks who maybe don't necessarily get fashion have been trying to crack into this in different ways. Google had this partnership with Levi where they created a smart jacket that had these textures in the cloth that were smart, that could, you know, listen, or maybe not listen, but they could tell that you're swiping or doing things. So you can control volume or pause music, you know, just touching your jacket. There's also the Apple Watch. Famously, when Apple first launched the watch, they thought that people would buy these gold versions that were up to $17,000. They sold some of them, but not as many as I think they thought they would. And then today, we are very much talking about glasses. You know, Google Glass is how it maybe started, but with Meta has partnered with, you know, with Oakley and Ray-Ban to create something that I think some people seem as stylish. And I'm just curious, as you watch from a person who's been on both of these sides, do you think it's important that fashion leads this, or the fashion industry leads it? Is it because technology industry has tried to lead it? Is it something that they're just missing in how they crack this nut of working together?
Yeah, I love it when you say crack the nut or crack the code, I guess you could say, when it comes to fashion technology or fashion tech. What you're delving into is fashion tech, and then there's wearable technology. Mm-hmm. So a couple years ago, as I was starting the Digital Runway, which is a media brand, and really it came about because I wanted to share with my C-level that I used to work with down to Gen Z colleagues or people that I used to manage, and they're all asking me, like, what the heck are you doing? What are you talking about? How does tech and AI or blockchain actually have anything to do with what we're doing, and why should we even care? But the examples that you gave and a lot of the questions that you had, I think, have been things that I've been mulling over myself. And for me, having worked on both sides of the industry, the traditional side, where I sat in boardrooms, had to present things, to working in a startup or advising startups in terms of how to figure out their go-to-market or their commercial strategy. The term stay in your lane has such a negative connotation, and I'll flip the switch on this one. In this case, fashion people should be doing fashion. Tech people should be doing tech. And there's the intersection, which is a rare breed currently right now, just because it's not as popularized yet, who can really, you know, intersect both worlds. But what it comes down to is having wearable fashion tech. And that was a term that I coined a couple of years ago. And the reason why, you know, the examples that you gave, Google, for example, with the Levi's partnership, again, you need someone who's going to advocate and actually understands both sides to actually build something where there's power play. There are huge companies and conglomerates that are coming together, but it needs to make sense at the end of the day. The Meta partnership with EssilorLuxottica, which is one of the biggest eyewear companies in the world, they started out with Ray-Ban and then got into more what they're calling, instead of AI, athletic intelligence. So they are getting into Oakley performance and how to use, you know, smart glasses or AI glasses or whatever you call it, wearables, in a performance mindset, right? So if you are running or you're doing extreme sports, you're actually wearing Oakleys that could capture that in a different way than the Ray-Bans could. But again, even going back to the Levi's example versus EssilorLuxottica and Meta, EssilorLuxottica did the design. Meta did the hardware, the software. So there was a merge between the two industries. I think the thing that I'm looking forward to coming up, and this is a play that I'm very interested with Google, and I'm sure, I don't know for sure, but I'm hoping that they will announce it this year during Google I.O., which is their partnership where they're actually launching, again, a form of wearable technology through glasses, so the Android XR glasses. But the difference this time around is that they are partnering with Gentle Monster, which happens to be a Korean company, one of the most innovative eyewear companies in the world, and Warby Parker, which would probably handle more of U.S. side distribution and kind of the business model, but had to actually get those glasses out there to the masses versus just to the tech people who are a very small subset. When you're talking about the commercialization of, you know, wearable fashion tech or fashion that people are going to wear that happen to have something tech in the glasses.
That's interesting because it really speaks to your stay in your own lane. You know, here you have one company that's focused on how do we make this a product that people will want to wear, and they're focused there while, you know, in the case that you gave, Meta is worrying about how do we build this technology to fit that. And so you have this meld that happens. It's interesting. I think that there are people who don't realize how much technology has kind of stepped into this space. You know, there are things that you may not think about when you're wearing whatever your Samsung buds, your AirPods in your ear, you know, whatever watch or digital watch that you have, whatever the bands are. I mean, that's something. And and there's been a long-standing partnership with Apple and Nike, you know, that started with putting these little things in your shoes that could do tracking. Now they don't need that anymore. But there are all these interesting ways where these things are intersecting. And I don't know if we think about the what I call the personal area network that is our body, that are all these interconnected devices that say something about you, that are fashion statements in a way.
The nerd in me is geeking out over the fact that you, instead of LAN, like L-A-N, you went P-A-N and created your own acronym for that. I think when it comes down to the ideology, the theology, and actually, at the end of the day, the commercialization of fashion technology or wearable technology, or kind of that intersection where, you know, fashion is wearable. You know, wearables actually, you know, will take the data in some shape or form, whether or not it's, as you said, an iWatch or a smart ring or a Whoop or whatever you're using. There is a specific use case of data that's being collected that you can analyze. And actually, even, you know, they're using AI at the end of the day to parse and to look through the data to give you analytics and a report that you could actually make sense of at the end of the day. But I think the role of people who actually function as a bridge, again, you know, understanding the fashion, understanding the tech, to actually speak the language, I think that is the next generation come up of the industry. And even just for myself, like culturally, I'm Korean American. I was born in the States. I lived in Korea for a year when I was in elementary school, came back. I had forgotten how to speak English. When I came back to the States, was put into English as a second language, and then, you know, spent a quarter of my life, so in my 30s, living in Asia across Hong Kong, Macau, China, Southeast Asia, and even Korea. And there is something about being a bridge culturally, commercially, and even with tech and innovation going forward, is they may not necessarily be the expert who can code or, you know, yeah, you could vibe code and things like that, or they may not be able to actually design a tech pack for a fashion item, but they know enough and can actually bridge people together to a common goal to create something that people would want to wear at the end of the day, because it looks like a fashion item or an accessory versus looking like a janky piece of tech that people are wondering, why did you even create this?
Yeah. So I wonder about these words, AI fashion. And when I think of AI fashion, and I'm curious how far off I am from the way that you describe it, or maybe I'm right on, but I think about some of the things that Amazon and Google are doing to make it easier for you to try on clothes virtually. There are a lot of solutions that are there now that you can take pictures of yourself, you can put these things in, and it can understand your dimensions of your body, and then it can say, hey, this is how this thing will fit on you, or how this clothing will drape on you, or I think drape's the right word, mm-hmm. I'm trying. to just give you a feel, you know, that it's one of the biggest issues that I think we've all had with virtually shopping, that you just don't know what you're going to get when that box comes in. And those are some of the ways, but that feels like that's only a piece of it.
There is so much that AI can do, especially in fashion, which I love tech, but I also have a healthy dose of anxiety and fear about where the world is going. And I think that this is a mentality that we should all have. I'd rather learn and leverage AI than get left behind. In terms of fashion, what you just mentioned, I mean, Google launched Doppel, which was their virtual try-on. It was dropped last year during Google I.O. where you could use an app. It'll take a photo of you, convert it into an AI avatar. You know, there's a lot of conversation whether or not the translation of the AI image of you as an avatar makes sense. And what I mean by that is it doesn't necessarily capture you in all of your dimensions, right? Mm-hmm. It will turn you into a runway model's body. And not everyone looks like that, and that's okay. But whether or not that makes sense when you're shopping and, you know, AI is sizing you. And I think what you were saying is a really commercial use case in terms of being able to take a photo, having it measure your specs, and then, you know, one designer or one brand, or, you know, French sizing versus American sizing versus buying something in Japan or Korea is going to look very different, and being able to translate that and actually size you. Surprisingly, that is not really a very widespread or ubiquitous use case that people are actually using right now. And that's on the commercial and the consumer side. But then you have AI that could actually help with production or actually fashion design. Like I was mentioning before, tech packs, basically a way to spec out what a garment looks like or what are the dimensions of a garment, and, you know, automatically curate all the different sizing, for example, in a pack that then gets sent to a factory that they could actually create the garment, for example. So there's a lot of different ways end to end that AI actually can impact the fashion life cycle, I would say.
On the digital runway, I think there was an article that I remember reading on your website about stylist and virtual styling as mm-hmm. well, which is a thing that these are, you know, I didn't realize that celebrities are paying. I mean, I should have guessed this, but celebrities are paying, you know, six-figure salaries to have stylists that come in to help them with everything from, you know, figuring out what they wear to their makeup to their hairstyles. And suddenly, in that same way, there are people returning to AI mm-hmm. and AI stylists that are possibly taking another job that we didn't think about away, but also it maybe makes this something that is easier and more accessible for people who've always wanted to dress like the celebrities do?
Yeah, I mean, AI fashion styling, I remember when I posted that Substack and I posted on social media, even LinkedIn, I had a lot of comments. And what I mean by that is both good, bad, and ugly. And what I mean by ugly is people who are scared of what's happening, which with any adoption curve that actually happens. The, like, La Roche is one of my favorite stylists. He worked with Zendaya, Kerry Washington, a bunch of other, you know, famous celebrities. And, you know, there was a debate on X where it was a conversation of whether or not AI can have taste. Right? They can have aesthetic. Of course, LLMs and AI can be trained on these things, and they could, you know, replicate by, you know, parsing the data of, you know, if you were to think about Clueless as a movie, right? Like taking a photo or image of every single thing in your wardrobe and understanding, okay, this person has this percentage of this color or this cut or something like this, where they have an analysis of who you are and what your closet looks like. Of course, it can suggest, AI can suggest, you know, what type of brand you may like that you may not know of, or what style or what particular item, but can it really curate the best style for you? I have been playing a lot with these apps, or even talking to ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini even about, you know, fashion styling, Korean color analysis, things like this. And I think at the end of the day, I don't think that the aesthetics are there yet. And this is just my personal opinion, because some people, maybe they have a different sense of style and they wouldn't put together the crazy outfits or have a, you know, a closet where I could literally walk out as 20 different people, because some days I'm dressing like a crypto tech bro in my black hoodie, my black Yankees hat. And today I'm wearing a, you know, a tartan colored blazer because, you know, just I want to express myself in different ways. And I don't necessarily think that AI virtual stylists are there yet to be able to do it. I think the more interesting use case for brands and for companies is being able to use AI as a personal shopper and collecting more data based on your responses and keeping you in the ecosystem of either their app or their website. Because again, then you have AEO, and I don't want to jump to another topic, but that's a whole nother conversation.
Well, the thing that I think is interesting about what you're saying is the similarities that I hear from creatives in a lot of different spaces about the fact that LLMs, these AI models, are trained. And because they're trained, they're a reflection of the information, the data that was used and given to them. And so it's one thing for it to understand, you know, everything that was in vogue for, you know, for decades and for years, but it's still using that to complete its thought as opposed to necessarily having the ability to create something original. Mm-hmm. And this is something I hear from musicians. This is something I hear from designers, that it's not necessarily creating something new. It's more like inspiration from the data that was used to model it. And I find that really interesting, because one of my other favorite Substack articles that you, blog pieces that you put together, was around a fashion brand that did a campaign using AI-generated models that also caused an uproar. And some of this has really made me start to ask this question about, you know, how do we define things like beauty? How do we define things that look good? You know, if I can quote from your blog post, the algorithm didn't invent our biases. It learned it from them, from the data, from our bias. So there's a question coming. Give me a second here. But on Instagram, one of the things that I think is really hilarious is this post where it's, you know, what does someone like look like in Maryland? Or, you know, and it's all based on stereotypes, and it puts together things. And so I decided to ask a question to ChatGPT. I said, without using memory or searching the web, can you use your training data to create a realistic photo of what you see as the most beautiful man and woman standing together? And I'm going to turn my laptop over.
I'm scared.
So This is what it sees, and I'll post this in the show notes. I'll make sure there's a link so you guys can see it. And then I said to make it for Maryland, and it updated it, so now she's wearing a red dress, and it's the state capitol picture in the background. So, I mean, it didn't do that much. But it comes to this whole idea of, like, how do we define beauty? How do we define, you know, what looks good, and how much of that is, you know, I mean, especially westernized because of the things and the data sets that were trained to create these models. And I'm wondering, like, what does that change the way that you think about fashion, or does it worry you about the impact that tools like AI might have and how we define fashion?
Ooh, that was, I have very spicy takes on this one.
Oh, and I love spicy. Come on. Bring the spice.
It's the Korean side. I bring a little kimchi spice to whatever I'm doing. But I am not surprised by the images that was generated by ChatGPT.
Do you mind describing them? Do you mind kind of giving a description of the images? I should have asked you for that before. Like, what that the man and woman look like, you know?
Oh, they're white.
Yeah.
I mean, I am absolutely not surprised. I mean, I think the one thing that I'll say is I did have a response in there. So the Vogue article, or sorry, the Vogue magazine had Guess, which is a brand, and they worked with a AI agency, Seraphine Velour, if I remember correctly. And they were actually saying, I mean, the ad itself is a blonde-haired, blue-eyed woman. I mean, take from that what you will. They themselves are actually minorities, people of color. So they actually tried, okay, to create AI models that were women and people of color. They did not get the best response on the algorithm, or people didn't hit like, comment, save, share, engage. So my whole thing is, if you want to support diversity and innovation, do it with where you put your attention, your money, and how you support, you know, different people. Because I think that this is a problem. I have a friend, she's Afro-Latina, she has vitiligo, where it's a skin condition where, you know, you lose your melanin. And she had to train her AI so that it would look like her that had vitiligo, because there wasn't a way for her to get that kind of response until she started feeding it images and it actually learned from that. So AI, as much as, you know, it learns from the data set, and then the algorithm, we're talking about social media or even how we spend our money. Are we buying from an ad like that Guess ad that I mentioned because it is a person of a specific race or it looks a certain way? And I'm not saying that there shouldn't be certain models or there should be more of this or anything like that. I think that there needs to be diversity and representation, and that's what is missing right now.
And this goes back to the thread earlier on in our conversation when you mentioned the tools that Google and Amazon are releasing that allows you to see how clothing fits on your body, that sometimes it suddenly makes you, you know, I haven't used these tools as much, but I doesn't surprise me that it would make you very model-esque or assume a specific body type, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that also comes into the idea of how this information or what has been used to train these things to give it a viewpoint or starting style in a way. I remember that this was a big thing that happened with Google Gemini. Maybe this was last year or 2 years ago, that there was an uproar because the images that it generated were very diverse, and diverse in cases where it didn't make sense in terms of historical accuracy. Mm-hmm. You know, the signing of the Bill of Rights or, you know, or the Constitution, and suddenly, you know, there's a group of a multicultural group of people that, you know, weren't there. And this, you know, this kind of comes back into this the same thing, the sensitive areas about the balance of how we see ourselves, how we view, you know, the world, and in the lens that suddenly we have tools like AI that are putting that same lens that we've used to train it towards the way that we write, the music that's being generated by these tools, as well as fashion and design. I didn't mean to. I think we both went to a spicy place.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm all for it. I mean, this is probably like a whole nother segment in terms of like racial diversity, representation, culture, and what that looks like in terms of tech and AI. And I think it looks different in different industries. You know, as you said, like even with music, you have people in the music industry who are very pro AI and other ones saying that it's going to kill the industry. I think the bottom line is that AI is literally coming for everything, and it will impact jobs, and it already has at the end of the day. So it's a matter of whether or not you're going to, again, you know, just something that I always tell people, you're either going to learn and leverage AI or you're going to get left behind. I'm sorry if you feel like it's, you know, environmental issue or for ethics or whatever that you don't want to engage with it. But, you know, I'm not a spring chicken. I'm in my 40s. Like, I've been around the world, and also I've been through different, you know, hype cycles. Whether or not it was social media and talking about Foursquare, e-commerce, you know, using live commerce and social commerce. I remember every single juncture having to fight people. And I was always that person that was like thinking ahead and trying to figure out like what are the different dots to actually make it make sense for people, but also leverage and use technology to create a different experience, both physically, physical and digital.
Well, speaking of commerce, I think that's one of the places that we've probably seen the biggest change in this industry, because now it's easier than it's ever been to launch a new brand, launch a new product, to create products of all type. I am constantly amazed of the amount of entrepreneurs that I run into that are launching businesses, and it's, you know, it's clothing, it's backpacks, it's new shoes, it's all these things. And you know, in commerce and Amazon, you know, for better or for worse, makes these things easier. I'm wondering if you find that there's, I guess, more diversity of product that it's, you know, filling up your closet space, you know, as opposed to the tentpole brands, as technology has had a role in this.
That is a very interesting take, and I'm not really quite sure if I've ever thought about it from that perspective before, whether or not tech has created a diversity. I guess it can create a new category, which is going back to the whole idea of wearable fashion tech or wearables, and what that looks like. I think having accessories that I would actually want to wear because it looks nice. Like, you know, having, you know, an NFC chip. I mean, usually if you see me out in the wild, I have NFC chip nails because I want people to connect with me and network quickly versus like opening up my phone and going through this process.
And just for anyone who doesn't know, like NFC means that like you can tap your phone against
yes.
it and send someone a message like your business card. So you have your business card literally in your fingers.
Yes. I have my LinkedIn on one on the left side and I have Substack on the other. The same technology that people use for a hotel card, for example, a key card. But I think the whole new category that's coming in, I think that's going to be the interesting part going forward in terms of what that looks like. And I don't think that I've seen anything so incredibly wow that has knocked my socks off. I've seen a lot of, I don't know if I can cuss on here, but bullshit, BS.
You can.
Okay, I've seen, well, not like, mom and dad, I'm sorry. Korean mom and dad, mama and papa park. But for example, like the friend necklace. It's essentially an Apple AirTag on a lanyard that got funded. And something like that still boggles my mind that they would get funded and blow majority of the money on a domain friend.com and the rest of it on a New York City subway campaign that got so much trolling and hate. It's a negative kind of marketing, but they still got some press out of it. But at the end of the day, they had to lower their price point from $129, I think, to $99 or something like that. Actually, don't quote me on that. But they had to change their price point, and it was recorded in the media that they only sold 1,000 units. But it's really, again, it's a stay in your lane, which is they should have hired fashion designers to actually design something. And the wild thing is, at CES, I saw the exact same device from somebody else. So we have a problem.
So for anyone who's listening, and this is our closing question, so one last thing before we go out. For anyone who's listening and who is interested in fashion and technology and is wondering about this world, like how AI and digital and emerging technologies all can intersect, what's the thing that you would tell them that they should really like make sure they're paying attention to, or they or what they should be listening to figure out how to work in this space?
Sure. Well, number one, you can follow the Digital Runway. I do cover it. It's a media brand that covers AI, beauty, fashion tech, wearables from a marketing strategy point of view. I am going to be dropping in the month of March. I'm not sure where when this post is, this pod is airing, but a whole fashion tech explained series where I literally break down the concepts and more educational content, just because I don't think that everyone is necessarily working in the industry and actually understands it. So yeah, I would love to connect on that side. The other thing that I would say is pay attention to wearables. We've seen Jacquemus, which is a French fashion brand, you know, do loose partnerships with Apple, you know, shot a campaign on the new iPhone. But what's going to be interesting is when they actually you see the connection between fashion brands and big tech actually creating wearables that are part of a fashion line. And again, we aren't there yet, but that's the future that I envision.
Janie Park is the founder of The Digital Runway. Thank you, Janie, for coming to the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason, for having me. It was fun to talk about what I love.
The path to growth shouldn't stop at the border. The World Trade Center Institute provides the connections, knowledge, and global network Maryland's most ambitious leaders need to scale. From executive development to international trade, we help our region's businesses thrive on the world stage. Start your global journey at WTCI.org. Invested in AI but not seeing results? You're not alone. Perry Labs helps organizations figure out what's working and what's next. Start with our AI assessment at perrylabs.io. Before we go, you know those Meta Ray-Ban glasses? Well, an investigator found that the video footage from those glasses is actually being sent to a subcontractor in Kenya for a human review. The workers are labeling the footage so that they can identify objects to better train Meta's AI. But they're seeing, they're seeing things. So keep in mind that this is a camera that's sitting in your glasses. So it's a first-person view, and it is capturing all types of video of people undressing in mirrors, using the bathroom, looking at credit cards, or you probably have guessed, engaging in very intimate activities. One worker told the reporter that, "I don't think they know, because if they knew what we're seeing, they wouldn't be recording." All right, folks, that's Thoughts on Tech and Things for this week. Let me know your thoughts by leaving a message in the WIPR app or calling 410-735-1616, or you can find me at jasonmperry.com. Thanks to the team at WIPR, our producers, Sam Bermes-Dawes and Shania Mapson, and Perry Labs Head of Operations and Marketing, Myrna Martinez. New episodes drop every other week. I'm Jason Michael Perry. This is Thoughts on Tech and Things, and I'll see you next time.